Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and I'm looking for answers. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to have a good, well-lived life? This podcast is conversations with people that look like they have it sorted. My guest on today's program is Stuart Mason, a local connection for me, but not that I knew it at the time. We met on LinkedIn, as I do with most of my business connections. It was great to discover that he lived just a few miles from me, so we met up at the local Costa to see how we might work together. When I heard his story, I realised that he would be a potential guest for the program, and when I asked, he said yes. Stuart left school in the 1980s with limited qualifications. He was running a business, a printing business as it happens, from his parents' attic and making more money than his father. Who needs exams, eh? But it turns out that he did need exams, as getting into the RAF without them was challenging, but not impossible, but it did prevent him from flying. Now you'll hear how he started his business in the 1990s and ran it very successfully for over 20 years while driving fast cars and flying helicopters. The financial crash came in 2007-2008 and that put an end to it all. I think you need to listen to the story to find out what happened next, but having returned to Lossiemouth, he brought with him a successful coaching practice. And he also returned to these printing roots by setting up the Moray Business Store, offering various printing and web services. The print business dovetails quite nicely together with his coaching skills. In our interview, he explores what went wrong with his printing company and how he sees the same mistakes in the businesses that he supports. Stuart speaks well, and I'm sorry that the audio recording is not the best. We had technical issues with my usual service, mainly down to the difficulties of rural internet speeds. I can speak to people all over the world, but give it a few miles up the road, not so easy. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Stuart Mason. So welcome to Life, Passion and Business. I just want to say thank you for Stuart for taking the time to see me today. It's fantastic that we're getting together here. And despite all the technology, we have managed to actually have a recording.
Absolutely.
So this is Life, Passion and Business. And I set this podcast up because I found that I got a certain stage in life that I had more questions than answers. And I was beginning to look around at myself, well, what's it all for? And maybe I could find answers to those questions by talking to people that had their own journey and maybe have come up with some conclusions themselves. And Stuart was one of my local connections, and it was great to reach out to him. And he said, yes, let's talk about it. So, Stuart, tell me a little bit more about you. How did you get to where you are now?
Yeah, it's interesting, Paul. And first of all, thanks for having me on your podcast. I really appreciate that. It's been a really interesting journey. And like you, I would say my recent journey has also asked more questions than it's got in answers. But to answer your question, where did it all start? It all started at school, and not for the way that you might think. When I was at school, I was a bit of a renegade. I would probably be what the teachers call a pain in the backside. And when I was at school, it was, it was pre-1980. I left school in 1982. So we were in sort of 1980, 1982. And if you were about at that point in time, you will remember CB radio was at its absolute peak. And I got involved with CB radio and also got involved with printing little cards that we all used and met each other. And to cut a very long story short, I started a little printing business in my loft when I was at school printing these cards. Now, the plus side of that was my entrepreneurial journey starting. The downside of it was I missed every single GCE exam that I was meant to sit because I was too busy. I was too busy on the radio, I was too busy printing the cards. And at this point, to put things into perspective, I was earning more money than my dad. And that pissed him off a wee bit. But it was really interesting, and that got me into business. And that was absolutely fine. So I left school at the ripe old age of 16, zero qualifications. And just a lot of passion and enthusiasm. So that passion, enthusiasm, to cut a very long story short, it was a hobby business. I played at it. Because when we're at school, we're taught how to do things. We're channeled to learn, do well, get a job, do better, get promotion. We don't go to school and go and do a hire and being an entrepreneur.
No.
We are taught how to do things. Unless you come from an entrepreneurial background, it's interesting.
Well, the problem is, Stuart, is that we are taught, the education system is developed to prepare people for the world of work.
Yes, exactly.
It's designed to make people fit in with the factory system of employment.
You're absolutely right. And if I have one mission in life in my later years, and some could argue I'm in my later years, it's to share that. It's to go to schools. It's to reach out to education platforms and say, listen, guys, there's a whole world out there of being an entrepreneur, and people like me need to share that with the schools. And I know a lot of people are doing that. So that was me. I left school and it became a hobby business, and I was doing pretty well, and I learned how to fly, and I got my pilot's license. And, I still have no qualifications, though, and I decided I was going to join the RAF. Said I wanted to be a pilot, fly for the RAF, with zero qualifications, really.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy that taught me to fly, a fantastic man called George Ebner, he's no longer with us. He was one of the few of the few. George was a Spitfire pilot in the Second World War. He taught me to fly, he saw something in me, and he put in a special recommendation, and he bugged people that he knew, and long story short, I joined RAF, not as a pilot, but as an air traffic controller.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't smart enough to be a pilot. And that's what brought me up here, that's what brought me to Lossiemouth. I was stationed here, and absolutely loved it. And then I decided, you know what, I need to get real here. I'm still doing a lot of printing. I ran the printing club on the station. I ran Station Magazine, so I was doing a lot sort of print related. But I thought, I need to get serious here, and decided I'm going to go for a career trip. So I went and did some hires, did higher English, higher maths, and law through the RAF, got all the qualifications I needed, and then bang, along came options for change, and nothing was happening with the RAF. So I left, and I started up my own printing business.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 1993, and I left the RAF and moved back to Glasgow and started my own printing business.
Wow.
And that business did phenomenally well. That business grew slowly in the first 5 years, then rapidly in the following 10.
What was the secret of that? Was that you, your passion and drive, or was it the system you put into it? I mean, what was it about that made it work?
You couldn't have asked a better question there. That's absolutely fantastic, because you used a great word there. Was it the system? There was no system. The reason the business did so well was because of blood, sweat, and tears. Now, let's just put into perspective what I define well-being. When the business was at its peak, with a massive big house, I drove around in a £186,000 Aston Martin Vanquish S.
Wow.
Which I used to drive to the airport to fly my own helicopter.
Bloody hell.
Because I've now got my helicopter license at this point as well. That's the kind of wealth that business was creating. You will notice I'm using the word was. I'm past tense here. That business failed on its 20th birthday.
Oh.
Now, if you're going to start a business today, well, 100 business owners all start a business today, and we meet up in 10 years' time, and the only way we can meet up in 10 years' time, if you're still trading, there'll be 4 people in that room.
Yeah.
Right, that's the horrible statistics of business ownership. So we defied all that odds. Then if you're one of the lucky 4 out of 100, something like 5% will go on to create the wealth that they actually aspire to do. So you think about having like a 20-year-old business, making lots of money. It doesn't happen very often. And why did that business fail? Well, you've actually answered that already. It was the systems. The systems were not in place for that business. I was the business.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could do the job better than me.
Yeah.
How many times have you heard that from business?
Oh, so many times. But it also covers another point in there, though. Is like you said, it's all very well saying that, you know, in 10 years' time, those businesses won't exist, or so many won't exist. A lot of that is because the owner didn't actually want them to exist. I think very few people set out to build a world-dominating business. Most people go into business just to kind of get by or for other reasons. And so that journey they take, say, if we said between 1 and 10 years, often they get diverted at 5 or get diverted at 3.
Yes.
And discover that, in fact, this journey I'm on wasn't actually where I wanted to be. And it may fail, you know, it may fail badly because, you know, that's the universe saying, no, this is not where you want to be. Or they may fail with a bit more control, which is where they're going, no, I don't want to be here. You know, and it can go either way, can't it?
It certainly can. In my experience, the vast majority of businesses that fail are something the business owner does not want to happen for obvious reasons. I think one thing in business today is very apparent. And from the business coaching element that I do, I see this a lot with clients, a lot with business owners that I meet. It's just hard. When people go out in business, and I had this conversation just yesterday with one of my friends who's got his own business and he started a new venture. It's just hard. And it takes longer than you expect, and it's harder than you expect. And of course, the rewards obviously are fantastically good if you get it right. But you mentioned the thing was the systems, and going back to that, if you've got a business that doesn't have those systems in place, then you don't have a scalable business. Does that make sense, Paul?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, it's like the famous story of McDonald's, isn't it? Because I think it's Ray Kroc, I think the guy's name, isn't it? I can't remember which one of it is, but he actually was the one that took the McDonald's brothers system. He discovered their diner or something and went in there, and the food was amazing. And he watched their system that they created, and he couldn't believe his eyes how fast they could actually produce a fresh burger. And he was so amazed by it. He said, guys, you've got a thing here. You know, McDonald's is not about burgers. It's about novelty toys and systems. And that's what made them successful.
Absolutely. And I cite McDonald's a lot when I'm doing presentations and seminars. You know, forget the product. You know, McDonald's is Marmite. You know, love it or hate it. But park that just now. What you've actually got is a global brand run by teenagers. You know, you've got kids running a restaurant that can't even keep their bedrooms tidy. And the reason they're doing that is because the systems are in place to make that so. It's a great example of how to run a business, how to scale a business.
Yes, because a lot of the main McDonald's are not, they're actually franchises, aren't they? So they, and literally you get your McDonald's your McDonald's manual and you open one.
Yes. That's exactly it.
But like going back to you and your story, so obviously you've had this amazing business. You've had this amazing opportunity to drive nice cars and fly helicopters as a printer, which is quite incongruous, really.
Yeah, that's the days when you could make money at a print. Hang on, let's be very clear here for this recording. That was not printing money. I said making money out.
Yeah, you can make money out.
Oh, hang on a minute. There's something to do with. So that was me. I'm now sitting, and listen, guys, there's one thing that's really important to point out here. When you lose a business, I tell you what, guys, you lose part of yourself. We, my wife and I, we'd spent 20 years hard work in that business, and the end came quick. It was a very, very cash rich business, and it went from being cash rich to cash poor. Within about 9 months, and then we made an... I made a number of mistakes. I tried to grow the business too quick. We tried to franchise it. I took my eye off the ball. I took my eye off the core business. And I did that in 2007. Right? The people are now going, because we all know what happened in 2007, 2008. I'm listening to the news, and I'm hearing the people come up to me and go, Freddie May and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac just went bust. I remember saying, well, with names like that, they deserve it. Mm-hmm. And then there was a run in the Northern Rock, and well, we know the rest. So I was trying to grow that business aggressively and massively at the worst possible time. So 2010, when we tried to launch that franchise, that was the deepest recession, deepest point of the recession. And my business was really suffering because I'd been out of it for 2 years, bearing in mind I was the business. Mm-hmm. So that caused a lot of problems. We got to 2013, and despite us having a property portfolio of 1.4 million, the bank wouldn't lend on it because they had a security over that. Yeah. And we had unencumbered assets of about 900,000. So we thought, look, if we can be mortgaged in half of that, we're back in cash rip again. But the bank were just being ridiculously bad. And I don't want to mention the bank's name because I think it'd be unprofessional to mention the Clydesdale.
But that was the point at the time. The banks were incredibly short-sighted at massively. The time. On it. I mean, they killed a lot of businesses that they did not need to kill.
100% agree, Paul. And RBS were getting the brunt of it. I know they did. But listen, they were all the same. I just know what banks are banks. But you know what? I've got to be above the line here and just say, listen, if I hadn't put the business in harm's way, then I would not have put the bank in that position of having to lend to a distressed business, because it was distressed.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to take ownership of your own responsibilities.
But it does surprise me that banks don't have proper facilities. I mean, like you think they would have a team to say, look, okay, we are prepared to lend you this, but we're going to put a special measures team in with you to make sure that we secure our money. That would be the way to professionally do it. And then, you know, to be honest, if a bank did that and saved your business, are you going to stick with that bank? Bloody yes. You know, absolutely. It's like, I mean, that's customer service to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, they charge a handsome fee for it as well, don't they?
But you could do it. You could actually say, okay, we're going to take a percentage of the business for a while. You know, you could do all sorts of possibilities, but banks are very short-sighted like that, I think.
Yes.
There's not a lot of creativity in banking.
No. And you speak to any banker and they will tell you that they're not in the risk business, which is fine. So, where are we now? We're up to 2013. I'm sitting about the world just ending, which I had. I just lost my big dog. He was 13, just weeks before that as well. You wake up in the morning and go, really? I even want to get up? So I then joined a company in Dundee, a fantastic company called Tradeprint, and I stayed there for 2 years as a production director. And had some good fun up there, really good fun. That was a fantastic business. 10 million turnover, 2 million net profit in print. Fantastic business. But unfortunately, we did a bit too well because that company was then acquired in 2015 by a company called Simpress, who you may know better as a trade name is Vistaprint, so a little small $1.9 billion company.
Okay.
So overnight became part of this global empire, and it wasn't for me. So I left shortly after acquisition, and I decided I wanted to do something. I wanted to get away from print. I wanted to get away from everything previous, and I wanted to help. I wanted to work with businesses, and business coaching really appealed to me. So I took on an Action Coach franchise and put that under the Murray Business Store brand, which brought everything sort of businessy into one store. So we did a bit of print, a web design, business coaching, social media, everything that small businesses need. And I tell you what, Paul, it's been a fantastic journey, but it's also been an incredibly frustrating journey. Because as this business has progressed, and as I've learned more as a business coach, I can now see all the mistakes that I made. And goodness me, there's been plenty of them. So much so that I've now started to write a book, and I've done a couple of presentations and seminars on this subject called How to Wreck Your Business. And the reason for that is because that's exactly what I did. I had a fantastic business and I wrecked it, not deliberately, but through ignorance and through arrogance. Mm-hmm. And if you're aware of that and you do nothing about it, then you are reckless. But the trouble is, I was what we call in coaching terms is unconsciously incompetent. I was crap and I didn't know it. And I did not know how to run it. I had a £2.7 million business. I didn't know business.
Well, to be honest, you kind of came, you weren't ever trained to do so, because you came from the, you know, you discovered this process from business from your attic as a teenager.
That's exactly right. So, yeah. I mean,
and we're not given those skills, you know.
No. And it's a huge learning curve. I can honestly say that I have learned more about business in the last 2 years than I did in those 20. And that's really what took me up to where I am just now, because when I look back and go, if I can build a business like that by accident and not having the knowledge and the tools that I've now got, goodness me, what can I do if I then start to focus?
So what is it you do now? How would you define yourself now? Because you're not, are you a printer? Are you, what would you call yourself now?
Well, I don't define myself as anything, because what and business owners do this all the time. What do you do? I'm a joiner. What do you do? I cut hair. You always go by what they do rather than what the business is. And I always say, it's not about what the business does. It's not about what the business is, rather, it's what the business does. Yeah. So when you say to me, what do I do? I don't say I'm a printer, I don't say I'm a business coach. It's, you know what, I've got a fantastic job. I work with small business owners and make them grow.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just sharp. So far, I've got a great job, I've got a fantastic job. I just work with business owners like you, and I just make you grow profitably.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, of course. And then I just sharp. And the next question you say is, how do you do that? And I do that through working, looking at the business, seeing what all the problems are, where the challenges are, where the opportunities are. And because I've got a printing and design business now, we do web design, we do print, we do a lot of display items. You can now start to work with business owners because we now know exactly what they're trying to achieve. Are you testing and measuring that? What testing and measuring? Okay. What are you trying to achieve? What's the outcome you desire through this campaign? What do you mean? Well, is it sales? Is it awareness? Is it brand? And when you start having those conversations, you really start to get to the bottom of what the business wants.
Yes. But invariably, I mean, you're talking to the converted here, because obviously I'm a digital marketer, and the first problem I have whenever I go in anywhere is people actually don't know what they want. They just want some more money and more profit. I go, yeah, okay, but how are you going to get there? What's the journey for that? Well, we just need some more sales. Okay, all right, yeah, okay, more sales is good. What sort of sales? Well, just sales. So we go around this interesting circle. Anyway, look, let's put it, bring it back to you. This podcast is ideally about your journey, about you. So for you, are you still passionate, or did you lose passion, or how do you, there's a lot of questions in there. What is passion for you, and how do you keep it? How do you maintain it?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Yeah, I've always been a passionate person. I don't ever give up. I mean, just give up just isn't, it's not on the radar. The passion for business is there, stronger now, and for me, stronger than it's ever been. And the reason for that is I get to work now with a number of really, really good, exciting businesses, and I'm also working for businesses where I can see massive potential. And there is nothing more rewarding. But let me just share one thing with you. I was working with one business owner. He's a very private person, so there's no way I'm going to mention his business or his name. And he's got a great business, an absolutely fantastic business. And the reason that business is so successful is because, you know, he flies under the radar and just does some amazing things. And I was leaving a coaching session from his house, and his wife came down to me and said, you know what, what a change in him, an absolutely unbelievable. And it's all down to the coaching.
Mm.
And I said, well, do you know what? I said, it's really nice to say that, but this business is going to be a massive success anyway. But when we look back, that business is now, it's quadrupled its turnover. It always was a seven-figure business. When I started working with them, they've quadrupled its turnover in 2 years. And it's just down to the systems, you know, everything I should have done in my business, they have done, and you can see it working.
I don't understand this is that we watch things on television. We watch, you know, our favorite football teams.
Yeah.
We watch the Olympics. We look at the Formula One. You know, yeah. We look at all of these things, all these things that's all about success and achievement. And the one thing they all have is coaches. And correct. Systems and people to make it work. You know, there's a coach looking at someone running and saying, now look, you run like this at the moment, and when you put your foot down, your left foot is kicking in, tracking in slightly. Try and hold the vision of putting your foot down perfectly straight. Yeah, now look, you see you doing it. And that's coaching in sports. And yet, we don't recognize the value of coaching in life.
Or business.
Well, that's what I meant, business and life. I call them the same absolutely. Thing in a way, but we just don't absolutely. See the point of it. And it's amazing that people just don't understand that.
It's a really interesting challenge that I have, but from the coaching element of the business, because the vast majority of business owners they don't see it as the value, right? They don't think they need it. No. There's still a perception in the UK, well, globally, but more so in the UK, my business is in trouble, I need a coach. That's actually the opposite. My business is doing really well, my business is doing good, I need a coach because I want to get to the next level. And you're absolutely right. And I'm often asked by business owners, well, are you better at business than me? No. Absolutely not. Is Andy Murray's tennis coach a better tennis player than him?
No.
No, of course not. But as a business coach, we see things. As a business coach, I go into business and I see things sometimes so obvious. Mm-hmm. There's one restaurant owner I was working with. Son was very enthusiastic. Father wasn't. Started working with them. And straight away, I'm looking around. I can see this business hemorrhaging money. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because you just see things and you work with the business owners. You hold them accountable. You get the plans in place. And I've said this many times, and I absolutely genuinely mean this, and it's what drove me to write this book. And just to put the book into perspective a wee bit, I'm in chapter one, page one, line one, a wee bit away. But, you know, it's so frustrating for me that when you can see business owners making the mistakes that I made, and they're so avoidable.
You've got a good story, and that always counts. So, look, to keep us on track, the next big question, obviously you discussed passion, and clearly you are passionate, so we'll stick with that. What is success for you? And has it changed?
Yeah, success. Yes, it has. Well, to be honest with you, right, this is on my desk. Right, this bit of metal, just a picture of a video, it says, this cab is hand-built, especially for Stuart Mason, the gas man pressed on it. I've still got that on my desk, right? And that's what I would always define as success, right? Success for me was money. Success for me was things. Success for me was status. And you know what? None of that's important anymore. Mm-hmm. Money unfortunately drives everything. But for me, it's all about having a reason to get up in the morning. I stay up in Lossiemouth now, and then you listen to this, and those Lossiemouths just know it's just God's country. I've got the beach right on my doorstep. And my drive and my ambition and my passion is still very, very much there. But it's not all about sort of work. Success for me now is build a business that helps other people achieve what their goals are. Success for me is to work less hours. I'm not really interested in going back in the massive drive for huge wealth. I just want to get up in the morning with a smile on my face, and stay in a place like this, it's not difficult to do.
That's a lovely answer. And it's very common, I think, when people go through that cycle of success and then they come out the other side. And anyway, obviously there are people that are so driven that, you know, that it continues. I mean, the Elon Musk of this world, he's driven by technological achievements. You know, yeah, and so he needs that. Say that again.
He's massively wealthy as well.
But it's a bit. But his dream has always been, you know, his dream has been to make a world a better place and get off the planet. So I mean, that's where his drive comes from. That's why he's generating massive wealth.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have no doubts. I've never met Elon Musk. I'd like to. But there is absolutely no way that money's his driving motive.
No, I don't think he. I don't think he'd actually be that pleasant to meet, to be honest, because. I mean, I have heard him say, you know, he said, if you're in a meeting with Elon Musk, he looks at you and goes, what are you in this meeting for? Get out. Unless you answer properly, you leave. He doesn't have any time for anything that does not take him forward to his goals. As I said, I don't think he's that pleasant a person to meet unless you are part of the picture. But anyway, yeah. That's just an impression I've had. Okay, so look, we have to wrap up this call. That I think we are traveling quite a speed, and I think you're very focused. So it's really brilliant that you speak so well. So I always ask people this question about this point in the recording, and that is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have done?
Let me think now. Yeah, I think there is actually. The question should be, if you could turn the clock back to 1982, what would you do?
Oh, well, then that's a good question.
So let's turn the clock back to 1982. So I'm still at school. I'm focused on doing all this print stuff because I'm making more money than my dad. So you can start to see where the seed of kind of greed almost came from.
Yeah.
If I could turn the clock right back to 1982, here's what I would do. I would work my butt off to get those qualifications, to get the qualifications that I needed to get into the RAF, to go for air crew. And that's what I would, that's the only thing I would change. Now, you will have noticed here that what I'm basically saying is, at 1982, I would have turned my back on my entrepreneurial journey.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back at 1982, that's what I probably would have done.
Mm-hmm. And by the sounds of it, it was always in you. So even if you had turned your back on it, you'd have come back to it later.
Yeah, potentially, mate. I'd done a couple of tours in RAF, flying fast jets, enjoying myself, come out of there and then done it. Who knows?
Indeed.
An interesting thing is, we'll get that all into the book on how to wreck your business clearly so that business owners don't.
So my final question to all of my guests, because in the day everybody is on a life journey and we all have this journey. We all have to make sense of it somehow. And here's the thing, you see, I came to this issue because I looked at my father's life, and my father died last year. And, you know, I mean, it was his life. He had a good life, and it was for him, he kind of, it ebbed away from him towards the end. He wanted to go. He died at 89, so it was never, not a problem. But I noticed that I was following similar patterns to him. And I mean, what's it all for? You know, we eat, we drink, we have sex, we have families, we have businesses, we make money, you know, we do all these things. And I kind of go, well, but what's it all for?
Mm.
So for Stuart, for you, what's the meaning of life?
Tell you what, you don't make these questions.
No, they don't. That's what. But I think people don't ask these questions enough of themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what this podcast is about, to try and bring these questions into reality. Because everybody knew the answer to these questions for themselves, they would live a better life.
I totally agree. So your question is, what's the meaning of life?
Yes.
My answer to that would be to make sure your life is meaning. And what I mean by that is, I don't know how many billions there are of us on this planet, but we're here for a good time, not a long time. And for me, I would like to see more people who, when their names are on tombstones, for people to walk past and go, I remember him.
Mm.
And sadly, for the vast majority of us, 99.9999%, the only people are going to remember is our family and maybe some close friends. For me, the meaning of life is to be remembered the things that you did. Make sure your life has meaning.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic, Stuart. Thank you so much for your time today. So if people want to get in touch with you or follow up with you in any way, how would they do that?
Best thing is probably to email me through the email address for the Murray Business Store, which is just hello@murraybusinessstore.com. I've jumped onto the website at murraybusinessstore.com and just pop me an email.
And they can find you on LinkedIn as well, can't they?
And you can find me on LinkedIn as well.
That's wonderful.
Can I just finish up one thing though, Paul? Because this is a bit of advice that I got from Brad Sugars, and Brad got it from the late, great Jim Rohn. And this is what business owners, and the advice is this: read a book a week for the rest of your life.
Mm.
Now, we're all very busy, so I include listening to audiobooks on that, and I've done that religiously for the last 2 years. Read a book a week for the rest of your life. That's 52 a year, and the wealth and depth of knowledge you're going to get is going to be phenomenal.
Yes, that's opening the conversation up about books, and there's it's quite, I mean, yes, I mean, I think something like the majority of people don't read a book a year, so
exactly.
Even if you read a book a month, you are ahead of the curve on most people.
Yeah, if you're in business, make it a week. Read a book a week for the rest of your life.
Thanks, Stuart. That's been a great conversation.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest Stuart Mason. If you would like to get in touch with Stuart, please visit the website and look at the podcast. His details will be at the bottom of the page. As you may already know, we've launched a second weekly podcast with my co-host Lisa Avery, and that comes out every Friday, so don't forget to check it out. It only remains for me to say thank you for listening, and I will catch you later.